Episode of the UGA Sports Live Podcast, recorded in front of a slightly tipsy studio audience at world famous Champions Fried Chicken. We will have the latest on Georgia Bulldogs football, basketball, and recruiting. Watch live and send us your questions on the 11 Alive Sports page on Facebook. Be advised, this podcast is off the record and not safe for work. Also, be sure to subscribe to the UGA Sports Live Podcast on iTunes and Google Play.
Hello, everybody. Welcome to this week's edition of UGA Sports Live here at Champions Chicken, Baxter Street, Athens, Georgia is the site. That's where we broadcast from. And I'm here with two of the best in the business, Rowdy Nabulsi, Dave McMahon. I'm Jake Roos.
I thought he was talking about somebody else.
Those two right there.
I'm Jake Roos, playing the role of Paul Meharry, I guess, this week. Big show lined up for you. Summer doldrums. Hey, what does that even mean? With SEC meetings going on and recruiting season right here, there's plenty to talk about, and it's been quite an eventful week, I guess, so far.
You know, our man Anthony Dasher's down in Destin covering SEC meetings, and he's had some news to report. You know, a lot of stuff going on down there. And see, I remember back in the days when you couldn't even go to the SEC meetings, you know, and now there's a ton of reporters down there because it's just gotten so big. But I guess. I won't say the biggest news to come out from down there, but to me, one of the more interesting things was Mr. Kirby Smart is Mr. Honesty at times. Now, there are times that he will.
Mr. Secretive at times.
Yeah, I was about to say he's very, very secretive. There are some times where, you know, it's like getting blood out of a turnip to just try to get any information out of him. But when you can talk to him directly and you ask him a question point blank, he will tell you. Usually the unvarnished truth, you know, he's like, hey, and he's not always putting a positive spin on it. He will, now, if he puts a negative spin on it, it might be for a reason, you know, to kick somebody in the butt, but he does not hold back. And he was asked about last year, and he came out and said, that was a disappointment.
Yeah, and, I don't think that there were a lot of people who would disagree with that.
No one was shocked, like, oh my God. But it's funny,
For him to come out and say it, though, that's not something we'd previously heard him say. And so I think it is definitely noteworthy.
He'd hinted around it and kind of said it, but he just came out and said, look, last year was a disappointment, flat out. And it's funny because when you go to ujsports.com right now and you look at the Q&A with Greg McGeary, if you read the first four questions, they're just so political. You know,
yeah.
Hey, are your coaches on board with this transfer? Well, they'll be on board with whatever decided. In other words, you know, four or five non-answers.
Sure.
But Kirby's like, no.
Kirby just goes right out there and swings and
just
goes
throws everybody under the bus. Because he was right. And he said, you can't have an 8-5 season in Georgia. And that's what we're seeing right now. The Bulldog Nation is not happy because they had a great recruiting class. Everybody was happy through February. And then you had the basketball season.
Yep.
Then you have an abysmal baseball season. You've had an abysmal recruiting season.
Yeah.
So, I just met a bunch of Georgia fans down in Orange Beach, talked to them. I mean, even, you know, they're on vacation. They're like, yeah, what's going on with Georgia sports right now? I mean, we had a poll question up at ugasports.com about Greg McGeary, and we'll get into it now. But what was the final on that? We had over 1,000 people voted.
Over 1,000 people, and I think it was something like 1,040 something to 40 and 20.
What were the options?
Options were: do you strongly agree with? Do you think he's doing a good job? Do you think he's not? You're not sure, or do you think he's doing a bad job?
Your thoughts on Greg McGeary? Good job, bad job, not sure. Over 1,000 people voted that he was doing a bad job.
Yeah.
That's 97%.
Yeah.
I was thinking maybe 50-50, 70-30, not 96-4.
Sure.
No, that's just – and again, I'm not banging on him. I'm just saying that right now things were kind of bad.
We're letting the people do that.
Yeah, and I think having – it was appropriate that the head coach came out down and, you know, when asked about last season, he goes, I was disappointed.
Okay.
You know, in other words, it was because he could have come out and said, "Hey, we had, you know, first year this, first year that, you know, nothing in the cupboard when I got here." He could have done a number of things to soften the blow, but he said, "No, 8-5 is pretty much unacceptable."
Here's the latest things on McGeary's approval: 27 votes for approved, 52 votes for unsure, and 1,087 for disapprove on how he's doing.
If Georgia had gone 10-3.
If they would have won all those little close games, if they would have won the Vanderbilt game, they won the Georgia Tech game, all the ones that they
not lose to Tennessee
could have won
on the
Tennessee
last second, I guarantee you it's 70-30 minimum.
Yeah, it's an absolutely different narrative then. But, you know, Dave and I actually were talking before the show started. The concerns there, you know, it wasn't like Georgia was necessarily out of that Tennessee game or out of some of those losses. Even the Vanderbilt game, I mean, it came down to a final play there. The concern that you have there is, okay, we seem to be able to hang in this, but we can't finish it.
Yeah.
And that becomes a little bit of a coaching concern.
Yeah, it is. And, you know, I think everyone would be like, well, it was his first year. You know, you're having to play a freshman quarterback. You're having your offensive line is not one of the better ones we've ever seen in Georgia. You know, he had a lot of excuses that he could play off of, and he didn't. And, you know, the defense was bad. We've talked about that, especially in the red zone. It was a bad defense. That's his thing. But I don't think that anyone was questioning Kirby Smart's coaching abilities with a new staff, you know, in year one. I think a lot of people were fine with 8-5, but I really think you're seeing the culmination of this recruiting class because it's like, oh, well, you know, he's learning the ropes as a coach, as a head coach, but man, the way he recruits. And after, you know, February, first week of February, everyone's like, yeah, this is what we wanted when we got Kirby. Look at this recruiting class.
Sure.
You're top three in the nation. And now you have two commits. You got two commits, and you've had three decommits.
Yeah.
And tomorrow's June 1st. So February, March, April, May.
So we're getting half a commit.
One big third of the season, you know, of the recruiting season, and you got two commits.
We're getting half a commit a month.
Yeah, and you're losing two-thirds of a commit amount. So,
the optics are poor. Yeah. The math is bad.
In other words, I just think that you mentioned the doldrums, and I know I've gone off on this huge tangent, but trying to bring in what Kirby said, you know, he was disappointed, and I think that he has gauged the – because he's been on that speaking tour, talking to the big donors. Again, another Greg McGarrity – something that's laid at Greg McGarrity's feet that wasn't his idea – but there's been an absolute cluster, is having the head coach go out and only talk to donors. It's the biggest bullshit I've ever seen in my life. It's ridiculous. Hey, we got a brand new coach, and he needs your support, but screw all you normal people. If you're not a $30,000 a year donor, you know, you can kiss our ass. And that's basically what they're saying. And, I mean, I've been out on the road three times to talk to Bulldog clubs. They're happy to have me down there. I'm pathetic. There's no reason you want to have me come to your damn club and talk to you about Georgia football, but they can't get an assistant coach. They can't get somebody from the administration. The last club I spoke to, okay, I go down to Statesboro. They have actually endowed a scholarship at the University of Georgia. They came up with $100,000 to give the university, and they were told for their endowment, you know, they would have a coach down there, usually the head coach, like every other year. Well, that disappeared.
Yeah.
So they put their money where their mouth is, and they can't get the endowments. I mean, they can't get the visitors. So, again, there's just this...
It's a spit in the face.
In other words, I think Kirby's seeing that because he knows what the fans are saying. And, you know, in other words, I think in the SEC meetings, if he had put a positive spin on an 8-5 season or given any excuses, I think people would have gotten madder. And he says, no. He called it what it is. It's a disappointment.
Now, you know, and you mentioned that, and I think it's such an important point about not going out and speaking to those guys. Yes, your $30,000 donors are how you get things like the indoor practice facility done. And yes, that's how you get your end zone thing finished. But the lifeblood of this program, the people who come week in and week out, they sit out there, they tailgate, they're sitting in the stands, they're not up in the skyboxes. Those are not $30,000 donors, you know,
where's
the most part.
Where's that $42, $44 million coming from?
Right, exactly.
The television.
Yeah.
Who's watching TV?
Right.
Your fans. You know? Again, so I get it. You know, those are the people you got to do. Right now, Georgia's trying to raise money like crazy. They got that West End Zone project, which again was discussed in Destin. And Kirby said, look, that's our number one priority right now. And I want to say this. People that say that that's a waste of money and that you should do more in the bathrooms, which Greg McGarrity is doing.
Yes.
They're trying to make the in-game user experience better. I spoke to one of their high-end guys who came out and said, look, we're trying to make, when you come to Sanford Stadium, it's like going to Chick-fil-A. We want to have that level of customer service.
Let's not get ahead of ourselves. Well, nobody's doing Chick-fil-A.
Well, that's what I'm saying. That's the goal that they want to have.
Sure.
And they've not had that. We've talked to fans who've come to the games who said that, You know, I get yelled at by the person that wants to scan my ticket, the person who's going through my bag. You know, I just had a very poor user experience. And there are people in the Athletic Association who want to correct that.
And you have to do that because Georgia is, whether or not people want to accept the fact, you are a little bit hamstrung by the fact that there's nowhere to expand the stadium. You can't build the stadium much bigger. It's not like Columbia where you're out in this open air and you've got room around it to go. I mean, you're in the heart of campus. You're surrounded by buildings. There's just not much that can be done from that aspect. So, yeah, I mean, you can improve and make some nice adjustments, but you can definitely fix the customer service experience.
Well, yeah, that can be fixed, and that has to be. But a lot of people said, well, why are you going to spend $60 million on the West End Zone project when you have ice that smells like doo-doo? You know?
And, a tradition unlike any other.
Yeah, exactly. You know, you have LSU corn dogs. You have doo-doo ice at Sanford State.
You should go head-to-head on that.
Yeah. And so you have issues about stuff like that. And they said the administration at Georgia is saying, look, we can fix that. We're going to fix that. But we have to have the $60 million. And one of the people who was in charge of this whole thing, who was said, no, we don't need all that. We don't need to spend $60 million. We don't need to have a recruiting
lounge,
and we don't need to have that. Thought that until he was taken on the route that the recruits have to take to get to their seats.
Right.
You enter in under the bridge, you have to walk through the sides, then you walk through the tunnels, then you walk through the haunted house, then you walk through the swinging blades you saw in Raiders of the Lost Ark. You know, I mean,
a big boulder chasing
you. Yeah, the big boulders, you know, tarantulas everywhere. Yeah. And then you get to your seats, which are either 9,000 degrees or, you know, absolute zero. Because if you're out there in a 12 o'clock game on August 30th.
Wait, 12 o'clock games?
Yeah, believe it or not, Georgia plays some 12 o'clock games.
What?
And so you're out there at noon, even on those first few games of September, and they're sweltering. And, of course, who do the recruits bring with them? Their mother, their father, their grandmother, their aunt.
Most grandmothers don't like sitting out in the...
You know,
the,
funny, they don't, not, you know, no. On the hot seat. So... they're getting melted out there. And then, if not, say they're showing up towards the end, you know, the guys that aren't committed, you're bringing them in those November games. They turn around, take pictures of, you know, guys trying to stay dry.
Sure.
These are your recruits.
Yeah, absolutely. You know,
this is the lifeblood of your program.
These are the ones that you're trying to improve.
You know, in my opinion, I know we just talked about lifeblood. You know, $30,000 donors are important. Fans showing up is important. Recruits are right. Recruits. Nobody's
so,
coming to watch.
And so anyway, the people that are complaining about why are we spending $60 million on recruits? Well, do you want to win or not?
Yeah.
But the thing is, a lot of people say, well, that's overkill. But until you've taken the circuitous route to get to the seating areas and then to have to split them up for, because funny, grandma doesn't care about Georgia football very often.
Right.
She wants to see her grandson get a University of Georgia education. You know what would be fantastic if, you know, you're playing that noon game on September 16th and it's hot as nine hells? If she could go down into the lounge and spend the entire time speaking with an academic advisor. Mom, too.
Yeah.
Dad, too.
Yeah.
You know?
Maybe a fine spread layout. Maybe some
little Canadian sausage balls, you know, little.
And I mean, we've been in the catacombs of that stadium. Yeah. There's really nothing very impressive. I mean, there's not a lot of area.
There's nowhere. And you have the worst locker room.
Yeah.
In the
SEC. Oh, man.
I think about it. Where do the guys, you bring them to the Buttsmere building and they put on jerseys and stuff there, but they're not in the stadium.
Yeah.
Then you got to bus them down to the stadium,
and then you want to
have a showpiece where you take them into the best locker room in the SEC. You know,
facilities matter;
they do. And so you show them that, you take them into it, and then you walk them out on the field, and you have a hype video playing. You have all that stuff. That's what you're spending your $60 million on.
Yeah, it's a huge difference from the locker rooms you see at Buttsmere where they get ready for, and then the locker rooms at the stadium.
Yeah, locker room and stadium. When you watch our post game videos, you can see how abysmal they are. Well, and think about this. There are guys, okay, this year, with Kirby Smart's first year, what did he make them do in the dog walk that was different than last year?
The suits.
They have to wear suits. Okay? They have to get taped up at Buttsmere.
Yeah.
So these guys are getting suits. So these guys are getting their ankles taped, then putting on dress socks and trying to squeeze those big ass feet in those in patent leather shoes. And to do the dog walk.
Yeah.
You can't have your guys walk in suits, hang their stuff up, you know, in a nice locker room, get taped down there, because they just don't have all the room and facilities to get all the taping stuff done.
Yeah.
Down
there. Yeah, I mean, it's
it's just it's a must. Georgia is
that's why Kirby Georgia's says it's our number one priority. Right
Georgia's now. Behind in the facilities race. Period. I mean, we went to Kentucky last
Maybe
year,
like the NCAA tournament, right? Tennis.
We went to Kentucky last year, and how cool was that stadium with $160 million revitalization in that place?
Fantastic.
Press box, incredible. Locker rooms, really, really nice.
Kentucky football.
They shot fireworks off. There was like a pavilion, like a patio for people to hang out on. The whole thing was
all
super
that Ole
cool.
Miss pavilion too.
Yeah, that was sick too.
In my opinion, we do things okay. We do good, but then we let everybody else pass us.
Yeah.
Do you remember when we first started school way back when? That Foley Field was a top 10 in the nation in the best stadiums in the nation.
Right.
Now it's not even the top 10 in the SEC.
That's true.
And we just got done renovating but we're still not there. And football's going to be the same way, and things good.
I think they're doing it now. And again, this goes back to the McGarry thing. A lot of people are like, why do you have $60 million in reserves? Well, part of that, and I'll tell you, I'll get on something else, but part of that is the fact that the minute they were done with graduation, you know, the minute they were done with stuff in the stadium, they started working on that West End of the expansion, and it's because they had money on reserves. And they didn't have to go to a bond thing. They were able to get it approved immediately.
Yep.
So I know people are complaining about the reserve fund and why is Georgia not spending? Why are Georgia tightwads? Georgia was not a tightwad with the indoor.
The indoor
facility
is
one of the best in the country. This West End zone expansion is going to be one of the best in the country. That's going to be fantastic. In other words, yes, Georgia was tight before. Yes, they have a reserve fund. The reserve fund is there for a reason. I'm fine with it.
Yeah.
You need it there. And here's the thing. The same person I was talking to who was trying to change the customer service experience inside Sanford Stadium did not realize that fans were mad about the reserve fund. And they did not realize that fans were mad about a lot of things. And I tried to patiently explain to them the way the Athletic Association does not talk to anybody.
Yeah.
And the way that Kirby's not talking to anybody. And this isn't about Kirby, but you know that's kind of systematic of it. The fact that you folks are not out meeting with the day-to-day fans, you're not putting out press releases, you're kind of holding everything and just saying, trust us. Trust us. We got this covered. There's a vacuum.
Yeah.
There's a lack of information. Guess what happens? It gets filled.
People create the narrative.
They do. And they create the narrative. And if somebody creates a negative narrative, other people will expound on it, and people will accept it because it's the only freaking narrative there is right now. So I know people that are living there. There shouldn't be nothing in the reserve fund, you know. We're good for $40 million a year because of TV. Well, that's not how it works, because if you try to say, we need $60 million to build this thing, and you go to a bank, the bank's like, you're living paycheck to paycheck? That's not how this works. We're not going to approve that.
Right.
So anyway, it's funny, right after we had that conversation, all of a sudden, Greg McGarry starts sending out letters to the big donors. Hey, did you see how our track team did? Hey, did you see what we're doing in the stadium?
Convenient, wasn't it?
It was funny, because the guy walked out, and he was like, wow, yeah. And you know, I'm going to go back and talk to our people about that fact that, you know,
see, to me,
nature abhors a vacuum.
Yeah.
And it's the same when it comes to the fans, you know?
And to me, that's very upsetting, the fact that here's a person or a group of people that want to improve the experience from the fans, but don't know what the fans want.
But don't talk to the fans. Yeah.
But don't want.
Here's the thing. They did know, because he knew a lot.
But he's not listening to them.
Well, they
or she. I don't know who it is.
Well, this person knew of issues that were obvious. Okay, bathrooms need to be adjusted. There needs to be quicker concessions. In other words, they know that it's getting easier and easier to stay home and watch the game on a giant TV where you see all the replays.
Yeah, where you got your cold beer in the fridge, you got your fried chicken
and
from Champions.
No line
to the bathroom either.
Right. Yeah. You swing by Champions, you pick up your food, you sit outside the stadium and watch the whole thing. I get it. So they're working on that. But I'm like, that was their idea of just trust us. We're working on this. I'm like, no, you need to tell people that you're fixing the bathrooms. You need to tell people that you're going to have the clear bag policy. You need to tell people what the score is of the other games. You know, put up those ribbon.
People love to see that stuff.
Yeah.
People, when they cut to those, when they cut to the other games, they put them up on the video board. People go nuts over that stuff.
Yeah,
especially when Tech is losing.
Yeah,
exactly. Or when Florida's losing. You know, show me the South Carolina score, because it probably matters.
Yeah.
So, in other words, I'm kind of getting circuitous here, but we saw that, you know, Greg McGarrity is getting hammered. Some of this is based on just right now, people are mad about football. They're mad about basketball. They're just in disbelief about baseball. All that's going to come down to the head coach, you know. I mean, the head administrator. So the AD gets blamed for all that. But to me, at 96%,
yeah.
I was still stunned. Yeah. Granted, like, what's been happening for the last few years, ever since the Todd Gurley thing, the administration's been getting hammered. When Jeremy Pruitt has to come out and beg for an athletic, for an indoor facility, and you see that you got $70 million sitting back, here's the thing, they're talking about a $30 to $40 million reserve fund. It's a heck of a lot more than that.
Sure.
Okay. Maybe they the folks that are doing all those FOI requests, AJC, Banner Herald, guys like that, you know, Jason Buck, they do great jobs of requesting all that stuff and putting it out there. We don't do as much on that. We're focusing more on recruiting. But dig a little deeper because there's more money than that reserve fund, from what I heard. So.
All right, so I think we've pretty amply touched on McGarrity and you know the sense
SEC
of
meetings.
Yeah, right, SEC meetings. I do want to touch though on something that we kind of got started on, and I don't think we fleshed it out enough. We talked Kirby mentioning that this last season was a disappointment. We talked about the recruiting being a disappointment thus far in 2018.
That's Greg McGarrity's fault. According to the fans, it is.
My question,
you know what's happened about that? Mike Bobo. It's not his fault anymore.
That's no Mike Bobo's fault.
Mike Bobo is making some good headway in the state of Georgia. He's picked up a few guys. But what's it going to take, realistically, for Kirby to not have to come out and say that next year? What's going to qualify a Georgia season in 2017 as not a disappointment? And I guess to say that, like, where – I mean, what's the bar? What has to be hit?
Has to be in Atlanta. You've got to win the East.
I think so, too.
I don't think you can tie for the East and the tiebreaker go to another team. And I don't care if you go to Atlanta and get your shorts handed to you.
No, I disagree. I think we have to go to Atlanta and then – and make it a game out of it, unless it's Alabama.
Nope. Nah, I don't think so either.
If we get our butts kicked –
people will be okay just to get back.
If we get our butts kicked and let's say Auburn's in there, you think you'd be okay with that?
I think they'd be a lot more okay with being at the table.
But I don't think if we get destroyed by Auburn, I don't think fans would be like –
yeah, but then you fall back on the fact that you've whooped Auburn how many times in a row?
Sure, and you've got, you know, people are still going to play the, well, Jacob Eason, you know, he's a sophomore. He's gotten a little bit better this year. He's brought you to the SEC championship.
Right.
Now, can he get you over the hump in that third year?
Right.
You know, that's the kind of thing. I mean, I totally agree with
but
you. I think
year two, if he wins the East and plays in Atlanta, he has a ring.
Yep.
You know?
People are not going to forgive another 8-5.
No.
It's just not going to happen.
And we thought when you first got hired, we said that, okay, you could have a couple seasons like that because we knew the state of the program. You're building it, first-year head coach, you know, freshman quarterback possibly because, you know, we thought that, Eason might not be the quarterback.
So sure.
Maybe you redshirt, you know, maybe Grayson Lambert takes you that second year. But no, the patience in the entire state, you know, be it for the Braves, the Falcons, the Hawks, whatever, when it comes to the Georgia right now, there's so little patience.
Yeah.
They're just
people are hungry for somebody to win.
And right.
And
that's why I think today's point, Dave makes a good point. If you go in there and you get you get pantsed by Auburn, that's going to go over poorly. And Dave has a finger on the pulse of the Bulldog Nation. He actually understands how mad the fans will get if they get embarrassed by Auburn in the SEC title game. My thing is, after the pain of such a loss were it to happen, they at least would be able to console themselves with, well, we won the East. Next year, we should win the whole thing, you know. But that's what did Mark Richt did.
Yeah.
You had 2 years where a new head coach to the SEC East, McElwain, comes in and wins the SEC East in years 1 and 2. And
Missouri.
Missouri comes in and wins it too. And you're like, wait a minute, the SEC East is down.
South Carolina had a win in the recently.
Like, this is abysmal. And you can't. Rick, you're the I think you had the longest tenure or
longest tenure in SEC.
And wait, you're losing to Missouri?
Right.
Missouri's playing in Atlanta. Florida's playing in Atlanta and a first and second year head coach. You shouldn't be doing this year 14-15. And even though you could see why it had happened, it was just unforgivable. And that's why I think in year two that he gets amplified – for Kirby. It's like, look, like you said, they won't accept it.
The other part of it, in my opinion, is, and I know we go back to this each year, and it really seems like it has been the case for Georgia in the last couple of years, the schedule is very much in their favor. I mean, you're not going up against, you're not playing Alabama, you're not playing LSU, you're playing Miss State, you know, who's down. You're playing Tennessee, who's really looking to bounce back on what they thought was going to be a tremendous year. You know, where do they go from here? South Carolina is still getting their legs under them, definitely, with Will Muschamp. You know,
Florida lost a lot.
Right, exactly. So, you know, the schedule sets up well for it. Even your big out-of-conference game, Notre Dame, that's a coach on the hot seat right now. Yeah. I mean, Brian Kelly is...
terrible year last year.
Yeah, so, you know, you're sitting there looking at it and saying, this seems doable. This feels like you should be able to,
but
to do this.
Georgia has heard that before.
Exactly. Well, exactly. But that's why you brought Kirby Smart.
The 10 years of Missouri won it. Yeah.
That's why you brought Kirby Smart in.
Right.
Is to get over that perception and this idea that, you know, that's as good as it's going to get. That? We've hit the watermark and that's it.
We'll plateaus. Where have we heard plateaus this week?
Yeah. So I agree. I think getting to Atlanta has got to be the mark. But like you said, plateaus. I think that's a great transition into...
Funny, I don't think I've done this before.
Into, you know, one of the other things that came out of the SEC meetings, they got to meet with basketball coaches, and one of the things that people are wondering, and was kind of brought up, is has the Bulldog basketball program plateaued under Mark Fox? And there are certainly people that would make that argument, and there's certainly reason to make that argument, I think. You know, I could see where people are coming from with that. Your thoughts.
He's running into the exact same thing that Mark Richt did.
Absolutely.
It's not year two. It's not year three. It's not even year four. You've been here in Athens quite some time.
Yeah.
And you're supposed to keep winning more and more and recruiting at a higher and higher level. And this year, when they took a step back after, you know, you had those 3-21 seasons, and now all of a sudden, hey, you don't even get to that level? Wait a minute. And it gets funny. You know, again, they've pegged it. You get used to a certain level of success, and then all of a sudden you fall below that. It's like, wait a minute, that's unacceptable. You can't have a blip on the year. And there's a reason David Perna has gone from the baseball team.
Yes.
You know, hey, success, bad year, success, bad year, success, bad year.
Yeah, we had a
bad year, bad year. Wait a minute, three bad years? But you're done, you know. So, again, you know, people expect a certain level of success, and so the question comes up, it's like, wow, all of a sudden you got 20 wins, and now you drop down to, what was it, 19, 18?
19 wins.
19 wins. You're not quite there, and you lost some stupid games.
Yeah.
And that's the thing is, I think the problem with basketball, I still don't think basketball is as bad as most of the Georgia fans say it is, but it's not good. It's not great. Yeah. But the problem is, Georgia plays a lot of the games, they play 35 minutes. But the problem is basketball is a 40-minute game.
Yep.
So they're not playing a consistent full game, and you're losing by the 1 point, the 2 points, the 3 points. And if you played a full 40 minutes of game time, you would have won those games by 1 point, 2 points, 3 points. And they lost a lot of games that they should have won. Yeah. But they were in games against Kentucky. They were in games against South Carolina. In games against Florida. They were
what, the two or three overtime games?
Yeah. I mean, they had two overtime games. They had one against Florida, a 4-point loss, and they had one against Kentucky, which was 9, but it was a lot closer
Then it
happened. So it's like they're there. They're just not playing the full game to win the
game. Is exactly what you think when someone asks a great question, has Georgia basketball plateaued? Is that as far as they're ever going to get? And then we kept expecting to see him recruit better.
This is the year. This is the year where you will find that answer, I think, because you're bringing back Yonte, and you've got a legitimate NBA ready prospect, a guy who was getting interest from that level, could have made that decision to explore his options and would have found himself a home. But
you had that with KCP. You had that, you know, guys is in Italy, just finished up.
Trey Tompkins.
Yeah, Trey Tompkins. You had a guy like that, right? You know, it's like, what?
Well, I think, can
you get it done with just one guy? But now we saw last year he brought in two freshmen who were ranked in the top 100,
right.
The first time he's ever done it.
Sure.
You know? They came on strong towards the end of the year, which made a lot of people mad because they didn't come on the beginning of the year, which I get it. I thought I understood some of the substitution patterns early on. I actually defended them in one podcast. Learned my lesson there because all the people that really know basketball thought I was an idiot. And they were right. I mean, maybe those guys should have been getting play earlier.
But apparently they couldn't play defense during practice.
That's very true. And so we see that.
but we never saw practice, so we could we didn't know what was going on.
Right. Funny what happens when you don't see practice.
I still say exactly. I still think Georgia has a chance to do very well in basketball, despite all that. But I think the main problem with the team this year is, can they find somebody to be the point? I mean, obviously losing J.J. Frazier is huge. I mean, they have Turtle. See if he could make it from a good average player to a good player or very good. Will Crump play some point guard? Will the new kid Hightower play some? I think all the rest of the pieces are there. But if they don't have anyone to bring the ball, or if they have someone that's going to commit a lot more turnovers and assists, I think that team's in trouble.
Yeah, that's and my fear is I can't. One of my biggest defenses of Mark Fox was he's a good in-game coach. And I'll still go up against a lot of people that say he's not. I've still seen him make adjustments in games to win them. And I've also seen him draw up plays where the guys don't do what they're supposed to do, and they wind up losing by that 1 or 2 points, as Dave pointed out. And my point being, it's the same with coaches. Like, okay, you screwed it up. Well, you know, sometimes it's player execution. And when after the game, when they lost by 1 or 2 points, people are like, no, it's Fox's fault. Well, and then sometimes it is.
And sometimes it is.
You know, in other words, there's no, we knew he's a good coach. We knew he's not a great recruiter. Let's see what he can do with better teams. You know, progressively better classes. And but now all of a sudden, the one before it, and I'm like, maybe there's not a plateau when it comes to coaching to Alabama. Yeah. That sure as hell doesn't help.
Yeah, no doubt.
And he's done great. Jonas Jennings actually.
I did that.
How many Jonas's do I know? But Jonas Hayes has done a great job and a ton of talent. But anyway, when you have guys like that, I'm like, you know, in other words, in the state of Georgia, right?
Yeah.
3 5-star quarterbacks.
Yeah, and a newly minted 4.
Yeah. It's the same with basketball. Dan McDonald does a great job covering basketball for us. I think he's the only guy on the Georgia beat that strictly covers Georgia basketball. And he knows all these top 4 and 5-star players in the state. But in, what is this, year 8 for Fox?
2009-10 was his first year.
Okay. Upcoming, he's recruiting for 2018 class. How many 5-stars has he gotten besides KCP?
Is it a nice little round number?
Yeah. My point being, you know, is I don't know if the plateau is on the court.
Right.
Is it on the recruiting trail? That's my biggest.
Yeah, and
that's what I've defended him for. So we know he's not a great recruiter. But you got to be a good recruiter at some point.
Yes, exactly. Yes, but how much better does recruiting become when you win?
You did something that you haven't done in a long time. You had 3 20-win seasons.
Yeah.
And that helped you bring in the 2017 class, you know.
And we talk about this a lot in football, but it's even more prevalent in basketball. The programs you're surrounded with here, I mean, it's murderer's row. Duke came in and got Wendell Carter out of Pace Academy.
Anytime he's a 5-star, goes to Duke, goes to Kansas, goes to
Arizona,
Kentucky, goes to North Carolina.
Yeah, I mean,
but then there's every now and then one goes to Alabama, one goes to Auburn, and that's what hurts.
And their kids in state.
Yep.
And that's what hurts the most.
Now I'm glad we did recruiting. We talked a little bit about recruiting because now I can get into my meat. Thank God. What I do and what I talk about.
Champions is great.
By the way, shout out to Champions. 5 o'clock on Fridays. They do the shrimp all day. They're awesome. And as is everything else, but the shrimp act very fantastic, exceptional. But recruiting. Something I wanted to get into. Obviously, that's what I do. Had a chance to get out on Memorial Day, go to the Cam Newton 7-on-7 tournament at Shiloh High School. Really impressive field. A lot of big-time targets out there. A lot of talent on the field. Got to tell you, I want to touch first on the Georgia commits because there were two out on the field, and that was Chris Smith, who, by the way, is now a 4-star on Rivals, has risen into the 250. Well earned.
Yes.
Chris Smith, a guy who, when we're talking about plateauing, I look for that in players sometimes. He is a guy, no sign of that. He has gotten consistently better each time. And that reminds me a little bit of what I saw from, like, Malik Herring last year. Malik just seemed to get that little bit of extra every single time I saw him. Chris definitely has brought that from rising seniors to now. Had a chance to see him a few times at some of the camps. He has really taken all this coaching very well. He's put himself in a great position and well earned on that. The other guy, though, is Jaden Hazelwood. Oh boy. Oh boy, do I love me some Jaden Hazelwood.
But he knocks guys out of games.
Yeah.
That wasn't as vicious. When I first heard about the vicious hit, I looked at him like, what?
Five-star status completely earned for that kid. Georgia does not have...
That's because Rivals likes Georgia.
That's a new one. Georgia does not have and has not had for a while, in my opinion, a guy like Hazelwood in the receiving corps. And, now Jeremiah Holloman is a guy I'm really high on. Right. I think he's got the potential to be that because he's got some of that same athleticism. But Hazelwood and that body control, you're talking about a guy who's 6'3", and you cannot blanket him in the end zone because he's going to bend around you. I mean, he's like Stretch Armstrong. He is all over the place, man. He can flex that body out in ways that no man his size should be able to. Loved watching him. Two guys I feel like very solidly committed, both of them. Big things on the horizon. Chris, obviously, for 2018. And I'll tell you what, I had a chance to speak with Chris real briefly, nothing formal. But he told me, I've got some guys I'm working on. I'm staying on these guys. We had a story up on it a couple days back at UGASports.com where he kind of outlined his targets. He's obviously playing at Hapeville Charter with Kingsley and Agbari, a guy that Georgia's really heavy on. I know South Carolina is as well. A couple of guys that I think Chris can definitely make some headway with. He's not Richard LeCount yet, in terms of the charisma. And he doesn't talk like Richard LeCount.
Nobody does.
Not nobody, because I'm going to give you one here in a second. But a couple of guys to watch out for. But Chris is a great leader for your class, a great example, I think, of what Georgia wants to do in this program. A true cornerback, which is especially important. He's not an athlete who's converting over there to play. This is a guy whose main position is to play out on the island. Well, and even Tyreek was playing quarterback for Peach County. He was splitting the time. Chris is a through-and-through defensive back. That's his moneymaker, and he knows it. The guys, though, that I wanted to point out, a couple of quick names I want to drop for you, and I dropped these the other day on the ball at UGASports.com, so make sure you get over there.
You're giving out premium content on the podcast? No, the
premium content
the
premium content is quite long, quite lengthy, and quite in-depth. A couple of guys, though, that I do want to put on people's radar. Colquitt County quarterback Stephen Krzyzewski, I believe is I'm saying it correctly. It's like Mike Krzyzewski. I don't know. It's Polish. Who knows what all those letters sound like? But Stephen Krzyzewski.
Just go with Stephen.
Yeah, Stephen, the quarterback at Colquitt County. I got a chance to go out there and see him. This was the first time I'd seen his film, and I liked what I'd seen out of that. This was the first chance I'd had to see him in person. Really impressed me with what he was able to do. Threw some really nice balls. A guy who's got some of those, mid-tier, I guess, D1 offers kind of hanging around right there. A guy that would not surprise me, and I don't know that this is going to happen, but if he makes his way to Athens this summer, he's a guy that I could definitely see impressing coaches and maybe becoming that guy because they want to take two this year. Yeah. He's not going to be the run-pass option guy, in my opinion, but he's the guy who can replicate a lot of the things that Jake Fromm and Jacob Eason do. Can he do them quite as well? No, but that's why they're five stars. This is a kid, though, that I do think is on the rise through the recruiting ranks. So keep an eye out for him. The other guy who I just loved, and he's highly on Georgia's radar, but I will mention him again because I do think he's got Richard LeCount type intangibles, is Quindarius Monday, who just made four stars on Rivals.com as well. Incredibly well earned.
That boy just never stops talking, does he?
The term I used is emotional leader. He is going to go to a team and he's going to become the heart and soul of a defense because of the way that he approaches it. You can see it when he's out there. He thrives on pumping guys up around him. It pumps him up to pump others up. And
great.
Yeah, you love that. You love that.
I love that at the Under Armour camp. He just would not stop talking. And you got to like it when the wide receiver is arguing with him and he can't hear the audible.
Yeah, right.
He's too busy talking smack to Monday.
Yeah.
And then all of a sudden the ball snapped to the wideout's like, crap.
Georgia's on Quindarius. I hope they put a lot more resources in. He's a guy I think is going to be an impact player. He's 6'3", so he's kind of that new breed. I mean, he's big, he's long. Really, really impressed with what I saw out of Quindarius. So I did want to mention him as well.
You're talking resources.
Yeah.
One of the things that came up in the meetings down in Destin was the early signing period.
Yeah.
And how a lot of ACC coaches are mad about it.
Yeah.
Not sure they're mad. They don't like it. And Kirby said, look, now instead of having, you know, one, all the stress and trouble that signing day caused, now we have it twice. And I'm like, yeah, that's going to be a very stressful thing.
I'm with you, my man. Yeah. I hear you. That's I feel you, Kirby.
And we talked about it last time, you know, about the fact that a lot of things will become clear about the time that December 21st rolls around when it's like, do you have something to sign from school X? Do you have something to sign from school Y? What is school Z telling you? You have a lot of clarity. And a lot of these coaches were upset about it. I got to say this, though. I think that they're – and Kirby pointed out, look, we, the guys that are – he didn't call them mid-tier, you know,
yeah.
But it was – he said the guys who are the very elite, they don't have to worry about this. They can go on to signing day. They will have a spot reserved anyway.
Sure.
But those guys who are not the top 50.
The creme de la creme.
You know, the guys are not – well, I should say the top 250.
Yeah,
you know,
right.
Because, I mean, there's –
I mean, they're
the top two. Anybody in the top 250 is depressed.
We know every year that there are guys who emerge right after Christmas. Yeah. The run up to signing day, it starts a scramble of, okay, well, let's see. We need a corner. Let's get film on this guy. Maybe we can get him up for a visit, work him out real quick. That's where a lot of those guys kind of end up finding their playing homes.
Well, not only that, you have guys that. While Georgia's still working hard to pick up their number one cornerback on their board, the number two guy, number three guy, number four guy, those might commit elsewhere.
Yeah.
And I think Kirby brought up the fact that, look, Ole Miss lost out on defensive tackle. They went and got one from Colorado State, who in turn took one from Jacksonville State. So everybody lost one in the final days. And what's going to happen is your number two, your number three, your fallback guys are signed elsewhere. So if you hold out – to get your number one, to get your number two.
You might get number 11. Goes,
exactly. That's exactly what's going to happen. And these coaches see that. They're like, you know, the game we used to play where, okay, we're going head-to-head for the five-star, and then we don't get him, and he kind of finally lets us know. Then we go pluck the kid that was going to Middle Tennessee State.
Right.
You know? We go pluck the kid that was going to Wyoming. We go steal from Mike Bobo. You know, hey, Mike, you did a great job recruiting that class. We're going to take this kid. We're going to take the kid that's going to Tulane. We're going to take the kid that's going to UAB. You know, and maybe not even that far down. You know, you take some guys that are going to Florida Atlantic. You know, you're taking some guys who were
Kiffin.
Yeah, yeah. You know, you take some guys who were, you take a Vanderbilt kid.
Yeah. Or Kentucky
You take Canarius Gates away from Kentucky and winds up being a 3 or 4 year starter for you, you know. That's the guy that you steal at the last minute or within the final weeks, like you said, the guy that emerges late, but if you hold out. And now all those guys are going to be signed. And I think these coaches are panicking because their Plan B guys are going to be signed somewhere else. Impossible to get them.
You better guarantee me that spot or I'm going to sign with Middle Tennessee State.
Absolutely.
It's up to you.
Exactly. So, in other words, the bluff is called 2 months early.
Yeah.
Well, 6 weeks early. So I think this is going to be –
it's going to be fun.
We mentioned it a lot, and we talked about it. It's a game changer. But I think this week in the SEC meetings down in Destin, the truth of it came out. The SEC coaches have had it made for years, and that when they come calling to a kid in the second, third week of January, and they go, look, I know how much you're dying to go to Middle Tennessee State, but I bet you'd have a lot more fun at Alabama.
Yeah.
And the kid flips to Alabama, you know. And it's not just – and if Alabama goes and steals a kid from South Carolina.
Sure.
You know, Georgia steals a kid, you know, from Ole Miss or from Mississippi State.
Yeah. I mean, what becomes of your, you know, a guy like Tyler Simmons, who was a three-star guy, kind of, you know, right there. I mean, obviously Alabama had a spot for him, wanted him. Georgia got back in there, though, right after the turn of the turn of the year. So – you know, is that guy off the board now? Is that, you know?
Yeah, the kid that went back and forth and almost died. I mean, you know, who was just pulled, you know, absolutely just pulled between Alabama and Georgia. Told his family the night before, I'm going to Alabama. That morning, picked Georgia.
Yep.
You know, he was in tears over it.
You know what? You know what's going to happen also?
But with that decided December 22nd, it's over.
What's going to happen also is a guy's going to commit to, let's say, Alabama, Auburn, whatever, and then all of a sudden, like in December, and then the coach leaves and stuff like that, and the kid's going to be trapped, like, does not want to play for
that's,
the new coach.
That's my big hang-up.
And it's going to happen a lot.
That's got to be fixed before this goes on.
That's my big hang-up is what's going to happen with those guys. You know, what's the contingency plan? Because, I mean, it gives some power, I guess, to the kids in that it guarantees them the spot. It goes ahead and locks them in so they can't get cut at the last minute. But, you know, the coaches are still gonna move. Everybody, I mean, there's no doubt about it.
Well, it's gonna be that same gamesmanship. You know, kids are gonna want you to prove that they have a spot with you. So, you know, look, the kids that get moved on, where all of a sudden it's the third week of January and you haven't heard from the coaches that you're committed to. They haven't been invited to visit you.
Yeah.
You know, and they're kind of just hoping that you'll quietly go away and decommit, go somewhere else. I guess you find out, and to me, it helps the kids because, hey, if you don't have something to sign on December 21st, December 22nd, you don't have that 3 days of the LOI to sign, well, now you know where you stand. So, anyway, I thought it was very interesting that the coaches are coming up with that.
No, I agree. I don't know. It's going to be an imperfect system, I think, for some time, is really kind of what it all boils down to. We'll see. Big news here. We'll break this one on air. Georgia apparently just picked up a commitment.
Did they?
That's Javon Becton, a 3-star defensive end out of Ocean Lakes High School. That's Virginia Beach. Boy, that's out of left field. Good news. I mean, I'm sure for Georgia fans, you gotta love that.
Three commits. Yeah.
Yeah. Yes, you're. Now
4 months, three commits. Hey, you got it in May, so it counts for May. So in the first quarter.
No one said math would be involved today.
No, the first third of your recruiting period, you picked up three. So that's a good start.
Yeah, absolutely. Sorry if I'm a little bit distracted right at this moment. One thing I did want to touch on, and we're getting close to wrapping things up here. So this will be a good one, I think, to kind of send us out on it. It's one more McGarrity thing, but it's not about Greg McGarrity. It's just about a question he was asked. Dave and I talked about it a little bit before we got on air. I want to get your take on it as well. The idea of booze in Sanford Stadium. The idea of alcohol. He said it's something that they're going to discuss. He said
they never talked about it. And I know that's a load.
Yeah, right. Yeah, I bet they've talked about it probably over some cold ones, if I were guessing. So
maybe not in an official meeting transcript that you can put together, you know, with an FOI request. But you can't tell me. In other words, if you are the athletic director at a major university, you know, a 92,000 seat stadium, and you're looking at revenues, and you've not discussed the possibility of having alcohol sales.
Yeah.
Especially when you brought back a guy. Yeah. They brought back Josh Brooks, who opened a beer garden at, was Millsaps?
I think, yeah.
There or ULM?
He was at Millsap.
Yeah, but he set it up there, if I'm not mistaken. They set up a beer garden. And there are other stadiums that they actually have beer sales and stuff like that. If you haven't discussed that ever, I'm like, wait a minute.
Do you hate money?
Exactly. Are you an idiot? Yeah. I mean, how stupid do you mean not to discuss it? So, I get it. Yes, it's, you know, the SEC's got a rule against it. Fine, I understand that. But you haven't talked about the possibility of, I don't know, the rules are usually agreed to by the presidents. How about if you're the athletic director going to your president saying, you know what would be a really good idea or a really bad idea? We don't ever want to have this, or we absolutely do want to have this.
But it's been discussed.
That, exactly. So, again, we go back. I come back to my point about, you know, Kirby will tell you what he's thinking, what's happened. You may not want to hear it, you know. But he's been honest. And that Greg McGarrity thing when the Q&A where he says, we haven't discussed that. Come on.
I kind of don't want the beer sales and stuff like that. And here's my reasons. One of the biggest complaints that Georgia fans have is how slow the concessions are. If there's beer, it's going to be even worse. It's going to take forever.
Yeah, but you can open up more concession stands.
Well, they could do. Why can't they do that right now?
But they are going to. That's my point. That's one of the things that they're going to do. When you go to the stadium this year, you'll see more concession stands than you did last year.
Okay, two. Georgia fans can't agree on anything. I mean, if we have Budweiser, we're going to want Miller. If we want Miller, we're going to want Coors. If we want Coors, we want Yingling. Yingling, we want Terrapin.
I disagree. Open up Terrapin and we're done.
I disagree. See, I disagree with that point because most people, if it's cold and it's beer, they're going to drink it. It doesn't
matter. But then the game, you
don't care. But they're going to still complain.
Oh, sure.
That's what the Georgia fans do.
It's not about complaining, but okay, you have the number. It's better to complain about your choices than to not have the choices at all.
And three, aren't you supposed to drink liquor and instead of beer during football games?
No, I mean, to me, it's like, look, if you're going to complain about it, that's fine. That's a great first world problem to have is I can't get my microbrew in here versus having to drink Budweiser. And considering some of Georgia's biggest donors are alcohol magnates, I can see a reason, something happening there. My thing is, if you go up into the very expensive suites, you go up there where the big donors are, and they have a bar in there.
Boy, they love those big donors, don't they?
Yeah. If they can have it, then the Joe Schmuck, who's, given, it's a absolute sacrifice for him to give the donation.
Sure.
To the university that allows them to buy the tickets.
Their kids aren't eating, but they
have... Yeah, exactly. Kids aren't eating. The guy has to walk from home, his dog's named Munson,
Yeah, right.
His kid's named Buck, The little girl's named Herschella.
Yeah.
This is the guy who, if he wants to have a Budweiser, he wants to have a Terrapin at the game.
Give him a cold beer.
That's what I'm saying. In other words, I'm for it. And people go, well, people will get drunk. Well, yeah, well, they can get drunk outside, too.
Well,
in other words, treat them like adults. If they do something stupid, it's on them.
I agree with that.
Don't have fourth quarter sales. Stop them in third quarter.
Sure.
But in other words, every other stadium, every other
conference,
every other sport, when you have 90,000 people to get together, there are beer sales. And say, oh, well, you can't do it because it's on a college campus.
You can carry a gun
stupid.
Now.
Yeah, you carry a gun, but you can't have a beer. You carry a Glock, but not a Heineken. I'm just saying, that's kind of stupid.
Yeah, I agree. And my only concern with it is having gone to games in the stadium and sat there, there are some people people get their drinking in.
Yeah, but think about it. If you could go and have a strawberry Rita, what are they called?
Yeah, sure.
The flavored beers.
Yeah.
Okay. You can have a co-ed drinking that, nursing one for the entire game, versus her downing, Sky vodka in a clear plastic bag that she came in with, put it into a Coke bottle. And in other words, drinking beer instead of liquor?
Sure, sure.
Maybe. And you don't have as many alcohol things. Because I remember the...
And it's not like the people are not drinking. I mean, right. we know.
So in other words, you make it worse.
Right.
Because they're like, well, it's tough to sneak in a 40. Yeah. But you can sneak in 14 ounces of hard liquor. They're drinking Goldschlager up there instead of, a Michelob. Let them have a Michelob.
Speaking of having a Michelob, let's go ahead and wrap this thing up. I can go use a couple of cold ones myself.
You got a story to write.
Hey, get over to UGASports.com. Dan McDonald actually just touched base with Georgia's newest commit, so big props to my man Dan for picking that one up while we're here live on the air. Thank you so much for tuning in tonight. make sure we'll be back at our normal time next week. That's Tuesday, 8 p.m. And make sure to join us here at Champions Chicken. We'd love to see you out. Thank you so much for tuning in, and this has been UGA Sports. Make sure to subscribe to the podcast, Google Play, and on iTunes.
All of them.
We love you.
That's it for this episode of the UGA Sports Live Podcast. Tune in next week for more Georgia Bulldogs news and notes from Athens.